Welcome. This podcast is an exploration into being human and what's possible when there's less attention on the noise in our heads. Warning. While listening to this broadcast, you may experience moments of deep peace, sighs of relief, personal insights, or long stretches of dead air. Do not be afraid. This is normal. Under the Noise with Wynne Morgan and Kate Roberts. Welcome. Today, with Kate Roberts and I on this week's Under the Noise, delighted to be sharing with you Michael Neal. Hi, Michael.
Hello there.
Hi. In a moment, Michael, I'm going to ask you to share what you'd like to let people know about you who might not have heard of you before. But I've got a quick story before that. I first met you in person 16 years ago. And I know I've written this to you in the past before, but I hope that you know how much of an impact you've had on my life and the knock-on effect that that's had on hundreds of other people's lives. It's been literally life-changing. And to be able to have called you a mentor and a coach and a teacher and a friend and a colleague has been one of the absolute highlights of my life. So I want to start there.
But so shall I wait to ruin the tone, or shall I share now that my abiding memory of that first meeting was you trying to find a place to pee on our dog walk that wasn't like on the road?
It's funny how we have different memories of different parts of that time.
The other stuff was really good too.
Well, I was going to come on to that because you and I, that session was in late 2010. So that was 11 years ago, that was, and 5 years after I'd first bumped into you on a separate training in London. But the story I had in my mind that I wanted to share was a conversation that you and I had over breakfast not far from where you lived in Topanga back in March of 2016. And we just swapped messages. I'd just come back from the first time I'd been on holiday to Hawaii. And I had 2 days back in LA beforehand, so we were able to meet up, and I hadn't seen you in about a year and a half, I don't think. And we were having breakfast, and we were reminiscing about that day in December 2010. And this is what I remember, that I hated the conversation. And I said something strange as I left your house that day in Los Angeles, which was, hey, if you do that program again next year, I'll be there. And I thought, what a strange thing for me to have said, having not really enjoyed the previous half-day session. And I had forgotten, I remembered the walk, and I remember seeing goats, but I did not remember needing to find somewhere to pee and not get arrested for it.
Well, like you say, separate realities. I mean,
realities. But this is the bit that I was astounded by when we talked in 2016. Was I had in my mind that it was a horrible afternoon, and you had in your mind, oh no, I knew you'd seen something. You were just very busy.
Yeah.
That's my definition of what really the separate realities was of that time together back in 2010.
Well, I think it was twofold from my side. One was, see, I always think that I have secret knowledge, apparently, as to whether or not somebody's engaged, regardless of what they're saying, which is if they keep turning up, they must be hearing something, because I'm not holding anyone at gunpoint, right? So it's a not so subtle clue. Like if somebody is listening to this, they must be hearing something, or they wouldn't be listening. There are a million podcasts nobody's listening to right now. So there's something about this. So that was part of it. But the other part, I don't know if you find this now, but you know, you talk about this as being, you know, under the noise. you get eyes for what's going on under the surface, is the way I would say it. Like the surface of the ocean does what it does. The surface of a lake or a river does what it does. But you can get a sense of the stillness underneath, the currents underneath, the deeper flow. And so, yeah, it was kind of obvious to me, but I wouldn't have, it was funny. We were watching a really cool psychological thriller, Nina and I, last night, called Behind Her Eyes. And there was a point, it's got a major plot twist, I won't ruin it, but there was a point where I twigged the plot twist really early, which pisses Nina off when I do that. And I grabbed my phone and I typed the plot twist so that later when I told her that I had figured it out, she couldn't say, no, you're just making that up. It was a bit like that. It's like, I didn't know exactly how it was going to play out. And I lovely having watched how it's played out. But yes, it's visible even at that moment.
My question that I'd love to explore with you regarding under the surface and under the noise for you, what have you seen for yourself recently that's been impactful for you?
I think the biggest thing that I've been seeing in the last few months is what I've taken to calling the four horsemen of the mental apocalypse. And it was a seeing originally in myself that I then started to see, oh, this isn't just me, this is a thing. And that fear, stress, pressure, and discouragement are the four things that I see as sort of dream killers in the world. You know, they're the four hurdles that people trip over on their way to doing something that they really want to do. So they take themselves out of the game by putting too much pressure on themselves. They take themselves out of the game by getting too stressed. They take themselves out of the game by getting too scared. They take themselves out of the game by getting discouraged before they even really get anywhere. And what became really obvious to me surprisingly recently is, oh, every single one of those things is me. Like every single one of those things is self-created, not deliberately, but they're all innocent misuses of the gift of thought. I scare myself. I discourage myself. I stress myself and I pressure myself. And if I'm the one doing it, even though it's not on purpose and it's not, I probably don't have to do it as much. And when I don't do it as much, I'm just there underneath the surface. I'm there under, they are the noise underneath which I operate really well. I live really well. And so there's just been something about seeing that and seeing how little it takes to see through it and to just go there less. And then because I know what it is, when I do go there, when I do not notice until I'm already scared or stressed or pressured or discouraged, I don't take the sensations as seriously. It's like, oh, this doesn't mean anything about the world or about me. This means I just gave myself a shot of adrenaline and now I'm trying to calm down. Right, that's it. Like I mentioned to you guys before, I'm kind of hyped up this morning with coffee and life and stuff. And so it's like, okay, so there's adrenaline running through my body. I can feel it. But the idea that it could interfere with anything that matters is kind of like the idea. I was talking to a client yesterday and they were saying that they thought that they couldn't dream unless they were in a quiet mind. And I thought, huh. I said, so is that like saying that if you're daydreaming in the passenger seat of a pickup truck and we hit a bumpy road, you have to wait till we're off the bumpy road to continue daydreaming? Because it's like, of course, you would have a moment of looking around to make sure it's safe. But once you realized, oh, it's just a bumpy road, you're just feeling the car go over the bumps. You can do anything you want with your mind. And so there's kind of this beautiful double-edged sword, sounds wrong because both edges are good, but like a beautiful double-edged good sword where you see, oh, I don't have to scare myself. I don't have to stress myself. I don't have to pressure myself. I don't have to discourage myself to be motivated, to be creative, to perform at a really high level, to enjoy my, like, I don't, none of that is required of me. I'm the one doing it inadvertently, mostly. I don't have to think like that. I don't have to do that. And if I do, if I am scared, if I am discouraged, if I am feeling pressure, if I am stressed, well, that's okay too. So I'm blessed if I don't, and I'm blessed if I do. And there's something really great about that setup. Like, it, you know, it'd be like, I don't know, going out and being given, you know, two options. Hey, you can drive down this bumpy road and I'll give you $1,000, or you can drive down this smooth road and I'll give you $1,000. It's like, all right, sounds good. When do we start?
A lot of people, when they notice, well, if it's not coming from out there, then it's me, that that's even worse news. And if someone's listening to it saying and realizing that, well, if it's not the outside world that's causing those four horsemen of the mental apocalypse, then it's me. Oh my Lord, what's up with me? What do you say to someone who thinks like, who sees it that way?
Well, it's not uncommon at all, because people hear it as, oh, so it's my fault. Like, I remember a client many years ago now who said that they wish they'd never met me. They said, because when I thought it was the world causing my problems, I was okay with that because I've overcome some pretty difficult things in my life. But if it's me, I don't even know where to start. And what really became obvious in speaking with that client was they thought it was on them to change. They didn't realize that we have this built-in intelligence that will simply adapt once it has better data. Once it knows what those feelings are telling you, that they're just giving you feedback about your state of mind. They're not telling you anything about life, the world, or you. The intelligence of the system automatically takes care of it from there. It self-corrects as needed. It returns to center like a pendulum that, you know, left to its own devices, will always find its way back home. And so it's in a category of things you've probably heard me talk about as good news that sounds like bad news. Like, because if you think it sounds like, oh no, it's me. Well, we're all in trouble then. But actually, once you see it's you, and once you see how well you're made, then it's like, oh, great, I'm off the hook. I can just get out of the way and let this settle now. And from that settled place, I'm going to do pretty well. And I don't have to be scared of noising back up. Like, that was what was interesting. I remember I gave my first public talk openly sharing this. Like, I shared it, but it was always kind of in different language. And in 2011, I was invited to the precursor of the 3P UK conference. And I almost didn't go because I just knew that I would get a lot of crap from the originals, as I wasn't quite as chill as them. And I decided also, though, well, let's get it over with. right? They, you know, if they're going to have a go, let's give them a reason to have a go. And so I went, and I gave a talk, and it went down extremely well. It was very funny and well received. But sure enough, you know, some of the originals in this understanding, you know, there was a whole discussion about he's ruining it. He's noising everybody back up. And what I was really surprised that hadn't occurred to them is that's okay. They'll settle back down. Because that's how we work. Somebody came up to me after a talk, because I often use weather analogies for moods and emotions. And they said, you know, so you're saying that we don't have to do anything about the weather, that it'll just pass. But, you know, what would you do if it was pouring outside right now and you had to go out? And I said, well, I'd get wet. But it would be okay, because then I'd dry out, because that's how we work. You don't have to be scared of noising yourself up. I mean, I always think of like Neil the Hippie from Young Ones. You're harshing my mellow, man, right? Like it's like, no, it's okay. You can wind up, because like a tetherball, you'll automatically unwind. I don't know if you call it tetherball in the UK. I don't know what you call that game with the hitting the ball on the rope.
I think there's something about knowing that when you're able to hold, you know, the ups and downs so much lighter, that they just naturally move through. And I think that's, you know, our natural and normal state is when they're flowing and moving and passing through. And I heard somebody say in the training that we did last weekend that nobody really questions when, you know, we get a cut and it heals. Nobody really questions that or wonders, what should I do? What's there to do? And I think that our minds are the same way. So many people, I think that there is something to do for it to heal, for things to pass through. So holding that lightly seems to let that natural process.
Well, yeah. Effectively, what most people do with a cut is put it away. Like they put something over it so it doesn't get infected. And then at some point they check it and it's healed. Right, but we think we have to rethink everything and think through everything and figure everything out in order to solve it, which is like continually picking at the wound and the scab, going, is it healing yet? Is it healing yet? And it's like, well, not anymore, but it will again.
What I remember noticing, and it helped me with the blame that I'm pretty sure I went through when I noticed it wasn't the outside world causing anything within me. To know that whatever I was feeling at any single time, it was totally human, and I'm one of them, in the same boat as everyone else. There was nothing personally that I was doing wrong, getting wrong, or paying back for bad karma or anything like that about a past life or anything else I might have done when I was 7. To see that is intrinsically how human beings are helped me as well to notice that I didn't have to do anything in order for me to settle back down and be more at peace with being in noise, being in that flow.
Yeah, I think one of the most important questions that we can ask is, what's the default and what's the habit? Because if the default was noisy, but you could train yourself, you could develop the habit of quieting down. That would be one approach to life. That would make sense of meditation practices, mindfulness practices, trying to move to the country, like all the different things people do to settle down. But if settled down is natural and the noise is the habit, well, that points to a completely different way of being with it. Because then, as Kate said, as you're saying, well, if it's going to settle down by itself, if it's going to return to normal, then it really doesn't make sense to do very much. And it does make sense to notice when I'm winding myself up. Like, that's like, well, maybe don't do that for a bit. But it's okay if you do, because it'll just unwind itself after. I'm going to break first. I had a teacher who, a man named Peter Fenner, he's a Buddhist, both a Buddhist monk and professor. And he would just evoke these periods of silence. Like, you know, you just fall into quiet around him, and it could happen mid-sentence, and it would go on for as long as you let it. And at the time I had really wanted to promote his work, but I told him I can't, because if I bring you on the radio, it's gonna be the weirdest episode ever. And it was interesting because I did actually finally interview him for a Might Help Can't Hurt podcast about, I don't know, a few months back, and we got through it. It was okay. There was a few moments like that, but we kind of kept it going a little. Do you know the old story about Rolls Royce, that the Ogilvy and Mather were the advertising agency that did the Rolls Royce ads in the 1970s. And there was an ad that went on to become very famous at the time. You can probably find it on YouTube, where they just show from the inside of a car, this beautiful countryside and this absolute quiet with just the sound of a clock ticking. And then the catchphrase that comes up at the end is, when you are driving in the Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow, the noisiest thing about your journey is the clock. And when they presented this to the CEO of Rolls-Royce, his response was apparently, yes, we really must do something about that damn clock.
That's a good story.
Yeah. But talk about under the noise. I mean, geez, that really is quiet if the only thing you can hear in a car is that. Well, I'm going to give a quick plug, Michael. Going back to that chat that we had back in 2016, you gave me an advanced copy of The Space Within, which is a book that came out a month or two later, if I remember.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. And I read that advanced copy later on that day as I just boarded the plane to fly back from Los Angeles back to London. And there has never been a book before or since that with every paragraph, I felt I would love to copy and paste it anywhere and everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that each of those paragraphs filled me with such a sense of relief and joy at the same time.
Mm.
And this book, and for those of you watching on YouTube, you can see it now, is just, it's one of those books. It's still my favorite book. And I don't know how many I've given out. It's well over 200, and probably 300 of the one before, The Inside Out Revolution, simply because it was out a little earlier. Few years earlier. But there is such an amazing sense of well-being that sprung up in me, mm-hmm. in reading those words that just felt like the truth of me on a page.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so funny because I was so, if the word would be scared or just insecure about writing that book, because I knew that I still got noisy. And it felt like, am I allowed to write this when when people meet me and I don't always come across like a Zen master? Right. And then ultimately I came to see that was the value of it. That actually, if I was all Zen and stuff all the time, then you're basically reading about somebody who's not you. Whereas if you, I mean, I find this with my kids, like they seem to get the most when they see me struggle with the same things they're struggling with, but not suffer from them, as opposed to just, no, well, that's not a problem for me because I have this deep spiritual understanding of, and it's like, yeah, no, I do. And sometimes I want to murder the guy who cuts me off in traffic. Right? I don't have a problem with that anymore, but I did. It was very sweet that I just got a testimonial through from Mike Dooley. I don't know if you know Mike Dooley, but he's a sort of a big New York Times bestselling author, and he's a quite a cool guy. And I was talking with the publisher about possibly putting this quote on the cover of a new edition of The Space Within. So he said, "A modern day Alan Watts, Michael Neal does a brilliant job using intelligence, humor, and heart to blend the sacred with the profane, gently revealing the deeper spiritual nature of everyday life." That is freaking beautiful, personally. But
wonderful. Wonderful.
Because it's got to be everyday life.
It has.
Like, I don't see the value, particularly in any kind of practice or understanding, that you have to put a pause on your life to benefit from. Like, in another time and place or lifetime, that might be helpful to me. But the life I find myself in, not so much.
I think that's super important too for anybody listening. That, the quiet doesn't necessarily mean silence. Even though, some people think that they're the same, I don't think that they are. I think it's the feeling behind everything. Something feels quiet. Feels like peace.
My first absolute experience of that was I was giving a talk. So every year, in fact, this last year was the first year I didn't because of COVID, but every year for the last 14 years, I think, I've given a talk at St. James Church in Piccadilly Circus in London. And it's they do these Monday night events called Alternatives, which is where they decided back in the 70s to open the church up to talks that are spiritual in nature, but not religious. And about 6 or 7 years ago, I was giving one of those talks, and they're gorgeous. And William Blake was baptized in that church. It's just this beautiful old space. And there were about 400 people. And I realized something mid-talk, and I almost couldn't wait to be done with the talk so I could tell somebody about it. But I went, as I'm talking, I'm thinking, I'm an upside down duck. And I don't know if you've heard the description of a duck as placid on the surface, but paddling like hell underneath. And I realized that I was very bouncy. I'm very bouncy when I present usually. And, I was waving my arms around and running around a little bit. But I was so still and so quiet underneath the noise, that I was like an underneath, I was like an upside down duck. I was paddling like hell on the surface, but I was completely still underneath. And I'd never had that experience so dramatically, where the contrast was so evident to me. And I think that's the confusion, is we look to the outside. Mm. How am I doing? Am I quieter? Well, you're still talking a lot. Yeah. Occupational hazard. I do it for a living. But underneath the noise, there's such a rich stillness most of the time that A, it informs the noise, but B, it just means the noise isn't an obstacle. I remember in the space within, I shared an early copy with my hairdresser, a woman who's been cutting my hair for 20 years. And she's not into this stuff, but she likes seeing my name on books. And so I gave her a copy. I didn't even expect her to read it. But she came back the next time I came in to get my hair cut and said, "Oh, I did that meditation from your book." And I was like, "What meditation?" Because I didn't remember putting a meditation in the book. And she said, "The one where you see all your thoughts like words on a page and you look to the blank page behind them." Now, that was a metaphor from the book. I just had never thought of it as something you would try to do on purpose. And it was cool that she did find a way to make that work for her, because that's effectively it. No matter how many words are on the page is always blank. And that's the shift in my mind, to recognize that, oh, we're the blank page, and it doesn't matter in any given moment how many words are being written on it. We don't have to control the word count. We don't need to have more of them. We're not getting paid by the word. We don't really need to have less of them either to experience the presence and the stillness and the quiet of the blank page. And that's my favorite. You know, I mentioned Peter Fenner earlier. My phrase I probably quote him the most on is, he used to talk to me a lot about having neither a preference for speech nor silence. It's not you should talk more, you shouldn't talk so much, you need to be quieter. It's just like, if you don't have a preference, then whatever is appropriate is likely to come out. And so because I do so much radio coaching, you know, where I have somebody for 7 minutes, people think, "Wow, your coaching style is very chatty and blah, blah, blah," which it can be. But what they don't see is, if I have a client in my house, we can go hours without talking. And I don't have a preference most of the time. Apparently I do during an interview like this, because I'm really uncomfortable with the quiet. But like at home, I'm really good.
I can vouch for that. I can vouch for that. You know, the thing that I've noticed for myself, going back to the words on a page and the upside down duck, is the words have become a lot more fun than they were a decade ago. And whether I'm an upside down duck and my feet are going 20 to the dozen and going really fast above, that's just far more enjoyable now than I ever thought possible. Well, I used to take that personally and permanently, and thought there was meaning to it. Yeah. So, Kate, any closing comments for you, or any other questions that you'd like to ask Michael before we close up?
Actually, yeah. Michael, I watched the, I don't know if it was the last morning ramble, but I love that new analogy of the, you know, the GPS and where the car was turning down the volume. I was like, oh my gosh, that's the coolest, you know, new metaphor that I've heard in a while. And I was wondering if you could just kind of talk about that for a minute. And I don't know, it just struck me, especially because our tendencies not to want to turn down, you know, we kind of like push it back up and want it to be back up, right? So that's so many of us want to, you know, keep both going on so much at the same time.
Yeah, it It was the last morning ramble on Instagram. It was because I was just thinking, you know, Dickon and I are doing a day. I'm sure it'll have happened by the time this comes out, but on called An End to Insecurity. Mm-hmm. So we've been spending a lot of time looking at the nature of insecurity and what's beyond it, what's underneath it. And one of the things that I just kept noticing is people talk about uncertainty and insecurity as if they're synonymous. And it's very apparent to me they have nothing to do with one another. I can be on a train that, you know, there's a 99.9% chance it's going to end up where it said on the front of the train. And I can feel massively insecure. Or I can be in a hospital where literally nobody really knows what's going to happen and be completely at peace. And so it was really pointing to the separation between the uncertainty of life, which is tangible and real, and the insecurity of experience, which is self-generated and self-maintained. And so the analogy was of how we try to use the radio of our thinking to navigate the road, the journey, when there's a GPS that is designed and plugged into a real-time satellite system that has all the data you couldn't possibly have for yourself to guide you. And, you know, specifically, it was a rental car I had where the music would drop down, or if I was listening to talk, it would just get quiet and I'd be like, oh shit, the radio's broken. And then it would, then the GPS would come in a beat later and give me the next direction. And it's just because we don't have that feature in our minds, the radio noise is constantly competing with the GPS. Mm. And like in the car I have now, if I turn down the radio, I can't hear the GPS. It's like I actually, they both have to be on. I have to be available to both in order to really hear. I can't make noise into the enemy. The noise will come and go. It'll get noisier and quieter. But the constant GPS, the constant guidance, is always there under the noise.
Love that. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Michael. So you've been listening to Under the Noise with Kate Roberts, Wynn Morgan, and today's guest, Michael Neal. And you can read about Michael and find out more about him on the links below and in the description of this podcast. And thanks again, and we'll see you all soon. Goodbye.
Thanks for joining us. We'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review. If you have a topic or question that you'd like us to chat about, email Wynn or Kate at wynn@wenning.co.uk and kate@katerobertscoaching.com. Until then, enjoy what's possible under the noise.